In 3, 2, 1.
In today's episode, my guests and I will talk about the ever-evolving landscape of marketing. We'll dissect the current state of marketing, shedding light on what truly works and what doesn't. From the rise of digital platforms to the art of authentic engagement, we'll leave no stone unturned as we uncover the secrets to effective marketing in today's fast-paced world. We'll also venture into the realm of best practices, where we'll unravel the keys to successful marketing techniques. So whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur, a budding business owner, or a marketing enthusiast, this discussion promises to equip you with invaluable insights that can elevate your marketing game to new heights. So if you're ready to unlock the power of innovative marketing strategies and gain a deeper understanding of what it takes to stand out in today's competitive market, then this episode is tailor-made for you. Join me now for my conversation with marketing expert, David Saxby. Well, hi, David. Welcome to the program. We're glad to have you.
Oh, thanks, Michael. Look forward to our podcast today and sharing some ideas about marketing.
Well, all things marketing, everybody has to market. Now, so we get into this, and before we start getting to some of the meat of this episode, can you share with us just a little bit about your journey into the marketing industry? What led you to start your own agency? You're out of high school, you're going to college or whatever you're doing, and you're going, hey, I think I'm going to be a marketer. Where did it all start for you?
Well, actually, age 11, I was watching Bewitched and saw what Darren did in the show, and that convinced me that I wanted to go into advertising. He was a creative director in advertising, and that's what prompted me. But in reality, I went through college for 4 years. After I got out of college, I went and worked for an advertising agency and was there 2 years and then decided to start my own agency. So I started out originally just as a one-person operation and grew that operation up to 23 people, and we did full service marketing. So the model had changed in the industry and realized that we wanted to bring everything in-house because no other agency did that. So it made us distinctive in the market.
Oh, absolutely. So you went from Elizabeth Montgomery twitching her nose and to becoming a madman after college.
That was exactly it. When I saw the show, I went, oh my God, this is too much like a reality show for me.
No, I hear you. That's funny. We all started with black and white. I mean, now we're dating ourselves, but that's all right. Well, let's talk about marketing. You've seen it evolve over the years from traditional marketing where you had your print, your media buys and everything. And the market's changed. It's been revolutionized for sure. And some would argue that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it has changed. How has the pandemic, in your opinion, changed? So what was marketing like from a focus prior to pandemic? And then what have you noticed since the pandemic? What's still working, what doesn't work anymore?
Sure. I think the biggest change that's happened is there's more focus now on direct customer relationships in marketing and personalization. That's a huge part of what happened. And the pandemic made us realize that it's all about building relationships. And so prior to that, I think a lot of the marketing, particularly online, was very generic, broad scope. Email was growing and becoming more and more effective. But I think the big thing now, if we look at the market today in the state of marketing, the tech advancement around this whole aspect of interpersonal relationships has forced us to realize that things like artificial intelligence and virtual reality and augmented reality are all about building that very specific message for a very specific audience. So if we look at things like the metaverse, Web 3.0, all of it's being decentralized so that marketers can actually reach out with content directly to their audience without that centralized platform such as Google and so on. And what's interesting about it is that as an avatar, and that's just our personality in general in marketing, you'll look and sound and interact just like yourself, even though it's maybe not you live. And as a result, you'll build interactions with customers all while you're sitting on the beach sipping a margarita.
Well, that's always a good thing. Now, well, it's something you're saying is the big agencies that used to just cater to the major brands, the major enterprise companies, now they're having to adapt because personalization is not something they do. They're used to traditional mass marketing. So the small, mid-sized business can actually compete with those folks now more effectively and sometimes even beat them in most situations because they have the flexibility. They can bob and weave in their marketing strategy, react a lot quicker versus making major commitments insurance and then crossing our fingers and hoping it works. That's what I hear you saying.
Absolutely. I think the smaller, more personalized marketing firms like ours have the ability to work more intimately with our customers and actually look at their audience and figure out what the messaging should be for their audience. And I think the other part of it is, too, is for businesses, especially small and medium-sized businesses, is all about focusing on the customer experience and building that trust and loyalty. And give you a good example. And now Starbucks is a big organization now, but what they're doing is they're looking at their customer loyalty program, and they've created a thing called Odyssey. It's still in beta testing form, where they were rewarding coffee drinkers for digital engagement. So there was the loyalty card before, where you get your card punched and you got a free cup of coffee. And now they're looking at the digital platform to do that. So those are some areas. And also with artificial intelligence, we're looking at content and being able to directly personalize with an interaction with the customer. We're looking at gaining more customer intelligence. So not only the demographics, age, income, lifestyle, so on, but the psychographics, how customers think, and the sociographics, which is about how the group of that sector operates. So in conjunction with that, we're talking about things like influencer marketing and social selling. So it used to be on social networks, the idea was you basically just sent information out, interacted with people, but you didn't pitch or sell. And now they're looking at how can we use that as a sales platform. And for small business in particular, this is one thing that's changed a lot as well, is there's a process now of being able to geo-target. So focus in very directly to a specific area, even your local neighborhood, and be able to target people specifically. You'll probably remember a movie called The Minority Report. And as Tom Cruise was walking through a mall, all of a sudden, the system scanned his retina, and they had a very specific message for him, targeted specifically at what his family was looking for and so on. And that was geo-targeting. That was 2002 that they predicted that was going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's a reality now for sure. When you talk about personalization, like bigger agencies, big companies, they'll put out big ads and hope something sticks, right? So there's awareness type ads, and there's a direct call to action type ads. And so what you're saying is by personalization and targeting, the small business owner, the mid-sized business owner, can actually target their specific ideal customer, personalize the message that's coming in there so that they're actually delivering content that's relevant to that particular client or avatar or ideal customer. And then with today's technology, they're able to compete and really master that art of personalization. What kind of things, because they've got all these other data, because I know we can access tons of data on our clients, our potential clients, we can retarget them, we can follow them around. And so we can go after that ideal person. Is there any other strategies that we should be focused on as far as personalization is concerned that are just must-haves?
Well, I think a big factor in personalization too is building trust.
Right.
And you know this from a sales process. If you pitch too soon, if you put your offer forward too soon, the customer is going to shut down. They're not going to share the information you need to be able to effectively make the sale. So the same thing's true in advertising. If you go out too fast in the market with a pitch, as opposed to just information that's helping the customer, then you can shut the relationship down. And what's interesting about marketing in general is, yes, there's been a lot of technology. Yes, there's been a lot of changes, but the fundamentals of marketing are still the same. And that is, you need a solid strategy. You need to understand your market in depth, and you need a clear and concise message, and then delivering it through the right channels. And that hasn't changed since day one of advertising.
Right message, right audience at right time is still the rule of the day, basically, is what you're saying. What are you saying as far as some of the common challenges that you see businesses face? You've worked with literally hundreds of clients. Are there commonalities when it comes to, you know, what you see and observe when it comes to what they're doing with their marketing efforts and or challenges with their marketing efforts and how you help them overcome them?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the biggest challenges for businesses, especially in a saturated market, is too much of the me too. A lot of them aren't differentiating themselves enough to be able to stand out in the market to give the customer a reason to buy from them versus buy from the competition. And I work a lot with professionals, and that's one of the biggest challenges in the professional market, is that they're basically trained the same, they put their message out the same, they reach the same audience. So they need to figure out how to differentiate themselves. And that's really the big key.
Separate yourself from the competition. Well, when it comes to differentiation in a crowded market, what advice do you have for businesses or clients to authentically stand out and become the preferred choice for their target customers?
Oh, I think first of all, it comes back to doing some research as to who your customer is and really dig deep into it. And like I say, we talked about demographics, psychographics, sociographics, but also understanding the customer's journey, where they start the engagement with you and then when they buy and the length of time in between. I think that's critical. Plus, you need to be able to hone your message in such a way that it hits the pain points first off. And that's the best way to engage the customer is to make sure that you're identifying their pain and then offer them a simple, easy solution and provide evidence or background information that will help them. And then last of all, make the customer experience a good experience. Because one of the challenges with a lot of businesses as they get busy, and this happens with all of us, even in the marketing world, is we get busy working with clients and we've forgotten to market and prospect and nurture those prospects. So we've got to find ways of doing that. One of the ways is education, providing education through video, through email, marketing, and so on, and just keep them in the loop of, you know, at the time when they're ready to buy.
Is there a proper cadence that you recommend? Like when we talk to clients and when we share information with them, we say, look, the potential customer you have falls into one of three buckets as we see them. Bucket number one, you landed right on the nose with these. They're actually looking for your solution. They have a problem. They recognize a problem and you're instantly viable and it's a quick transaction. So it happens quickly within maybe the first 90 days. Second bucket is maybe 3 to 6 months, 3 to 9 months out. They're thinking about it. It's a possibility, particularly for higher ticket items versus spontaneous items. And they do their homework, they're thinking, but you're on their radar and they quite possibly can go with you. And then there's the third bucket where, hey, not this year, not interested. Why the heck do we need you anyway? But they might be viable or they meet our qualification standards. And what I think a lot of businesses fail is the sales department make their pitch. They go after a potential target and then they don't follow up. There's no follow up. And if the client says yes, they know what to do. They have a sales transaction. They're good to go. Everybody's high-fiving everyone. If they get a no or a maybe, they're lost. And so marketing can serve a good role there, I think. And you and I've talked about this, you know, offline where you can message them and nurture that relationship over time, but there's a certain cadence to that nurturing. And there are certain rules we should follow when we nurture. In other words, deliver content, things that are valuable to keep it positioned. Is that what you're saying here?
Absolutely. I think it's a big challenge for a lot of organizations, more so for large corporations, but even for small organizations, is sales and marketing seem to be separate. You've got your sales team out selling, you've got your marketing team pushing messages out or responding to incoming messages. It has to be a uniform approach. And one of the things that we look at when we're working with, and especially with a small organization, is we need to look at media that they already own. So that's their website and material that they've created to help their company promote. Then we need to look at media that's shared. So social networks and so on, engage and join groups and share information through those areas. Then look at earned media. So that's public relations, being able to engage people through various channels and social media that earns you the right to share information and then eventually sell to them. And then last of all, and this is where most small businesses don't enter, is the paid market, you know, or paid marketing. And we recommend that most organizations, until they get to a certain sales level, they don't spend a lot of money on paid marketing, that they focus on the other three areas.
You're talking pay-per-click or display ads.
Yeah, exactly.
Focusing on content, put the money in, the resources into content value. Is there a cadence that you recommend? So let's say that we don't have money for advertising. We've identified some targets. We've got people who are immediately in need of our product, but then we have those people that are in bucket number two or bucket number three. How much contact is okay? How much are okay hearing from us? And how much is too much?
Well, that's a real interesting question. It's also a challenging question in that if it's a simple product, low price, quick engagement over a short period of time will help encourage people to buy. If it's a more complex product, like let's say we're selling technology, then we need to go through the process of, first of all, reaching out and creating a conversation, determining what their needs are. Then from there, be able to suggest ideas for them, help educate them, and then at that point, continue to educate for a short period of time. It used to be that if you sent out an email once a month, that was great. And then it became if you sent it out weekly, well, that was okay. And I have seen marketing now where businesses are sending out half a dozen emails in a day to communicate. But I think the thing is to have a mix, a marketing mix, so that you're not just blasting out emails, that you're looking at other channels to reach people, engagement through social media. If it's B2B, LinkedIn's probably the best format to communicate. And first of all, make a connection with a reason to connect. And then from there, share some information about who you are and why the relationship might be essential to that person to connect with you. And then from there, you can reach out to have a conversation either in person or through email or engage them. And I think nowadays, too many businesses focus on just delivering one message and they keep blasting it out over and over and over. That's not going to work. A regular message, but changed every time.
Right. So you're evolving the message. Now, you mentioned LinkedIn. Are there platforms that you just don't work for certain types of businesses and other platforms that are absolutely ideal? For instance, LinkedIn, what kind of businesses work best for LinkedIn? What works best for Instagram or Facebook, Snapchat, you know, and TikTok or doing shorts or YouTube videos? For instance, you know, as a consultant or as a speaker in our podcast, we advertise or we market a position, if you will, on Instagram, Facebook, all the major markets, because it makes sense. That's where people want to consume that. But as my speaking business, as a professional speaker, I don't go on all those other platforms, primarily LinkedIn, maybe Instagram, you know, Twitter, now called X, of course. So yeah, how do you determine, hey, which platform is best for me?
Well, I think the essential part of it is to figure out where the largest portion of your target market hang out. And for B2B, business to business, LinkedIn is the location where most businesses connect. YouTube is great for sharing information and showcasing, if you want to call it that. So as a speaker, and I'm in the speaking business as well, putting up short clips of what we do can help people get a sense of who we are and what we deliver for a message. If you look at Twitter, it used to be that Twitter, you could only have 144 characters. So I likened that to a headline in advertising, a head and a subheadline, 144 characters. But now they're talking with Twitter to be able to go up to 10,000 characters. So that's areas where you could post articles and that type of thing. Instagram and TikTok chat, mostly related to other age groups. So young people in particular, and the opportunity there is really to reach them with specific short messages.
Right. Probably lower cost items too. They're probably not going to fork out, you know, thousands of dollars for something. Is there spontaneous purchases or go from there? So I think the value bomb there was, where's your audience hang out? The bulk of that audience.
Absolutely.
Go after that and solve the issues there.
This episode is sponsored in part by Rainmaker Digital Solutions, featuring ActiveCampaign. Looking to drive growth with customer experience automation? ActiveCampaign, the number one marketing automation platform for e-commerce, B2C and B2B companies, gives you the email marketing, marketing automation, and CRM tools you need to create incredible customer experiences. ActiveCampaign is the platform we use to reach, nurture, convert, and grow our business, and you can use it to grow yours. You can see why 150,000 plus businesses like yours choose ActiveCampaign to help them grow and become preferred in the markets they serve. You can also start your free trial by visiting our website and clicking on the ActiveCampaign trial link. As a bonus, we'll also give you a digital copy of my book, Becoming Preferred, How to Outsell the Competition. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am a shareholder in the company.
And now back to my conversation with David Saxby. In your experience, what are some of the key components of a successful marketing campaign? So every campaign is a little different. People think marketing is just, they don't get the idea of the concept of a campaign. And a campaign is just like we would see in a political campaign. They map out a strategy for a period of time. You know, if it's in the US, it's going to be for 2 years. If it's in Canada, it's, you know, it's 3 months because elections never last that long. But people get their campaigns going, and the campaign is a roadmap, isn't it? It's planning out that strategy.
Absolutely.
Can you give us an example of the key components that are must-haves, and then maybe give us an example where those were employed or applied and it yielded some exceptional results?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key point is that it's a process. Marketing is a process. First thing, of course, is doing the research and then planning out a strategy. And the strategy has to follow the customer journey. So we need to understand where the customer interfaces, when they buy, how often they buy, all of those sorts of things, and what they're buying. And from that perspective, I think the key also is that you have to look at a mix of media. You have to look at messages that interact with the audiences, perhaps in different ways. So short messages on Twitter, longer messages on other formats. And then the content of the message is critical as well. And we talked about this briefly before, is we have to interrupt them. So it doesn't matter if it's an article or an ad, we need to interrupt their thinking. And today, with all the bombardment of information, it's very difficult. So we have to interrupt them. Then we have to engage them. That's the subheadline. And then the third part is to educate them. Fourth part is, of course, to make the offer. And then the last part is the close, you know, getting people engaged. So one of the things that happens, though, in the process is the message gets confused. So we had a client of ours where they had 15 different companies, 15 different brands, 15 different messages going out to their market. And so we did some deep research, found out that their customers didn't know anything about them. Most of their staff didn't have a clue that there was 14 other companies. Their management team couldn't tell us what the purpose of all these different companies were and so on. We went in and did a brand assessment that went into the market and did some marketing research and found out that basically no one could repeat the initials of their name. No one knew the companies that they had. When they went into a meeting to pitch their business, they spent 45 minutes to an hour explaining what all these 15 companies did. So we rebranded that company, and as a result of the rebrand, now they had an identity in the market. And then under that brand, we had services. And when that rebrand went out to the market, everybody understood what business they were in and what services they had under that umbrella. The interesting part, too, is even the managers didn't talk to each other, even though they were part of the major company. They didn't talk to each other. They didn't share leads. And the other big part of getting a message across the market and creating an impact is creating that marketing dominating position. And what that is simply finding a spot in the market where your business makes sense to the consumer or the customer. So in business to business, the client. And if you look at Uber as an example, Uber was a substitute for taxis, much more upscale. Pricing was about the same, but they had an appeal because vehicles were clean and classy, so on. Along came a little company that decided to take a piece of the market away, and that was Lyft. And what Lyft did is they did the opposite for their branding. So instead of black logo, black message, black presentation, they had pink, and their cars were pink. The original cars had fuzzy mustaches on them. The riders sat up front and talked to the drivers, and the drivers were very conversational, fun, and interesting. So they were able to carve a significant chunk of that same market simply because of their positioning in the market and how they were able to dominate their particular target market. And I think that's the critical part.
No, it's interesting. Well, I'm talking about process. I think it is a process. It's identifying that process. Can you share a time where, you know, maybe we failed at that, or maybe you've seen it fail where a marketing strategy didn't go as planned? And what were the key learnings from that experience? You know, it just went, hey, we went down this road. Maybe we didn't do this. We didn't do this. We didn't do this. And our results were gut-wrenching, just devastating, just didn't work. Can you think of a major failure?
Oh, absolutely. And this goes back to my own career. When I built up that large marketing firm, we worked with Shaw Cable. That was one of our major clients. And they did a launch shortly after their rates went up because the CRTC decided to increase the rates across the board. We did a launch of the specialty channels. And of course, there was a fee attached to that. And so we knew the pushback in the market was, hey, you just increased our fees a couple of months ago and you're doing this again. We thought, you know, the thinking was most customers were going to opt out and not take on the specialty channels. So what we did with Shaw Cable was we introduced the idea of a smorgasbord. And the smorgasbord was all the specialty channels. And we said, just because you go to a smorgasbord, you're not going to eat everything. But when you want a certain topic or a certain type of entertainment, you have this option. And as a result of that, they had a 94% resubscription rate. And we did what was called a negative option campaign. So if you didn't want the service, send us a message. If you wanted the service, you didn't need to do anything. services would be added to your next bill. Now, it was interesting. 3 months later, Rogers came out and tried to duplicate that and miserably failed. The media picked up on it and said, how dare you do this? And you need to give your customers the choice and so on and so forth. And they had to redo the whole entire marketing campaign. So part of it is timing when it's launched. Part of it is really understanding what the customer is thinking and what they're going to do. And then being able to deliver the right message in a way that appeals to customers. So the concept of a smorgasbord was something that customers could relate to.
Sure. Well, and it's not a perfect science. Marketing isn't a perfect science. It's often the first thing that gets cut, as you know, when times get tough, companies cut their marketing budget, and this is probably the worst thing that they should be doing. But what they should be doing is putting it and channeling that budget into more effective modalities, if you will, or media types in order to make it work. So with that ever-evolving digital landscape, because it's changing all the time, what do you see as the most impactful emerging trends in marketing today? And how should businesses prepare to leverage them? What are you seeing?
Well, I think we talked about a few already, which is the personalization. I think the use of the AI is good for being able to generate leads and be able to get information out quickly to the markets. I also think that one of the areas that's going to be a significant impact in the market now is the whole influencer marketing and being able to connect with people that are game changers in the industry, particularly in business to business, because creating things like a joint venture or an affiliate marketing program can help grow your business exponentially quickly without the added cost. So those are some areas that I think the businesses need to look at, particularly small to medium-sized businesses, because they don't have the huge budgets that major national or international companies have.
Interesting. With the marketplace evolving, and you've got this process for identifying clients and what their needs are, how can a business target that audience specifically in order to find that ideal client? And then how do we make sure that we're getting the right message to them? Do you recommend, for instance, like an A-B test, where we might send out two different messages to two different groups? How do I know that I'm resonating? Because they're bombarded with messaging. How do we get through all the noise?
Oh, I think you hit the nail on the head. One thing is to test your message. Depending on how large your market is, to immediately send out a message and test it and get the results, not to the entire audience, but in small groups and get feedback. And A-B testing goes back to direct mail days, where you send out two different packages with two different messages on them and checked out which one worked first. Well, same thing works with social media, is to send out separate messages, test them and see which works, and then roll it out to the large audience. I think another area is also being able to use your CRM system to manage outbound and inbound automation, so that you're automating your e-newsletters, you're tracking the leads from that, you're looking at social media. So a lot of CRM systems, customer relationship management systems now, have the capability of not only email and data management, but the possibility of launching automated social media campaigns and measuring them and tracking them. You also want to use a mix. In some businesses, you need to have a mix of both classic marketing or traditional marketing and digital marketing. And I think one of the failures of a lot of marketing firms now is they only focus on digital. But in some businesses, and I've done work in the building industry, the trades industry, and a lot of that industry is still using traditional marketing and traditional channels of communication. And I laugh because I worked with a firm for about 4 years training their people, and the guys would bring in a 2x4 with the order on it. What's the chances they're going to integrate through TikTok or Snapchat or any of those channels?
Right. Finding that right mix, I think, like you said, and then get the message out there. Where's your audience? If you're maybe in construction, it's a different audience. Where do you find them? And that's why we have different media outlets. So it's finding that audience, targeting the message, and making sure your message applies to them. Because at the end of the day, they're always looking at it going, what's in it for me? And it's not a perfect science. And that's why we can get it mostly there, but then you get the little trial and error. And that's what testing does. When it comes to marketing and you tell people, hey, I'm in marketing, marketing is right down the bottom of the list with politicians. Do people trust marketers? I'm not sure if we're behind politicians or ahead of them. What are some of the misconceptions or myths about marketing that you often come across? And what truth should businesses embrace instead?
Oh, I think one of the big myths is that marketing is expensive and it's a cost. And yes, if it's badly done, it becomes a cost. If it's done well, it can generate a lot of incoming traffic to your business, lead generation, and focus on targets that you want to reach that maybe you currently can't reach. So it can fill that funnel in such a way that then your sales team doesn't have to work as hard to be able to get the leads that they need. So that's one myth. Second of all, that marketing is an event. I think a lot of people go, well, we did some marketing. We posted something on Facebook. And how often did you do that? Well, we only did it once. We didn't get a result. First of all, for business to business, Facebook isn't going to work necessarily. Second of all, unless it's frequent and consistent, you're not going to get results. Then the third thing is that people want to measure it. Well, it may take time to be able to get some significant measurement. Posting once and looking at the results is not going to give you a true picture of how the market's going to react. And so the challenge for people like me, like you, in the marketing and sales game is that in many cases, clients come to us when they're desperate and they've got no traffic coming in, they've got no money in the bank, and they're not getting results and they want a Band-Aid. And the fact is, at that point, it's difficult to be able to get traction immediately. They're desperate. So it's better to be able to come to somebody like ourselves. And we have a way of analyzing the market. We have a software called the Profit Analysis Software, and we're able to look at a business and determine, here's what you're currently doing, and here's the opportunities you've missed, and here's a report that shows you where the gaps are, and then we're able to create a plan. So I think for us, that creates a bit more trust with our customers because they're able to actually see hard figures and facts and information that's going to help them set up a plan.
And no, I think you're right on. We've gone through that process with you, and the information, what you see, the insights that you get of what's working, what's not, it's quite comprehensive. And we'll have that information in the show notes if people want to go through that process with you. It's definitely worth doing if you want to take an assessment, see where you're weak, where you're strong, and where it can be improved. When it comes to ROIs, is there a rule of thumb on, first of all, how much we should be budgeting for our marketing? Like, I remember back in the day, we used to say, hey, it was about 2% of your gross. And whatever your growth, that was a number we kind of threw out. Now it's more like 5%. Is there a number that's just, you know, for every 100,000 I generate in revenue, how much I should be spending or putting back into my marketing efforts? Now I realize there's awareness campaigns, there's different types of call to action campaigns. But as a rule on my marketing dollar, what kind of things should I be seeing?
Well, I think, again, first of all, you need to really focus on your business goals and strategies. Mm-hmm. And from that, determine if you're a new company entering into business, you're going to have to spend a significant amount of marketing dollars up front to get traction, especially if it's a saturated market. So typically, with a lot of businesses, a minimum of 5% on the spend on marketing. And this is 5% of gross on marketing.
Yeah, so that's still a valid number then. Okay, good.
Yeah, but in some industries, and I'll give you some examples, in technology, in most cases in technology, a very competitive market, your window of being able to get a product into the market and get traction is around 12 months. 12 to 18 months. So technology companies may spend up to 20% of gross to be able to get their product into the market in a way that's going to create traction. Retail, again, depending on what they're selling, there's a lot of things like seasonality. So they have to look at it and say, okay, when's our peak season? When's our off season? And then spend accordingly. So cycling the marketing as well, cycling the marketing budget might be an important thing to look at with some businesses. Construction's a good example as well.
Right.
So when it comes to professionals, we work with professionals, lawyers, engineers, doctors, architects, and so on, as well as financial planners and financial service organizations. They need to look at things like their market positioning, saturation, regulatory requirements, and then attracting clients because of the style of organization and the services they offer. So they may spend up to 15% of their budget as well.
Interesting. No, those are good numbers. So looking ahead, what do you envision the future of marketing to be like? And what should businesses start focusing on now to stay ahead in coming years and stay ahead of their competitors? What should they be doing? What should they be looking at?
Well, I think, first of all, marketing is not going to stop. If anything, it's going to get more intense. The changes in marketing are become more rapid. And looking at things like AI and how it can assist marketing, I don't think we can avoid it. It's going to happen with or without us. But the important part is to make certain that we're looking at marketing from the right perspective, and that's an investment in future business. And also being able to do an analysis is important as to what's working, what's not working, and be able to change that up. I think most companies should do a one-year plan. They should look at a long-term three-year plan, but continually be able to adjust and add or subtract what they're doing in such a way that they can create an impact on a regular basis. Also, our markets are changing. That's one of the big challenges. Boomers are getting older. They're retiring. They're not spending as much money. Some businesses have succession plans for when the owner leaves. Others don't. And so that's an important thing to consider with the older age groups and more established businesses. We want to be able to measure our media, especially in social media. Most social media platforms have a measurement tool, but also to use independent tools that can help track and measure and then look at the statistics and information over a period of time. And then most importantly, go back to our business goals and say, is our strategy still on track? Is our plan still working? Are we achieving what we said we were going to achieve? Or do we need to do something different?
Review and adjust.
Absolutely.
And to your point, the analytics are there on most of the platforms. And today, the analytics, when you run your agency, the data that you would have to get compiled, the smaller business couldn't have access to. Today, we can. We can know exactly what's going on, where every dollar is spent and how it's done. So I kind of like where it's evolved. And really, if you're a smaller, mid-sized company with the right tools, the right strategy, what you're saying too is they can compete and we can maximize those dollars so that we're getting the maximum ROI for every dollar we do invest. And marketing should have a return on investment. So we should be able to measure it. I always think of the Apple Watch. You know, I'm an Apple Watch user. I had a really nice watch, but I bought an Apple Watch because it gives me so much data. You know, I measure my heart, how I'm sleeping, my calories burned, number of steps. I track all kinds of things. And then I focus and take a look at it. You know, what I'm eating even. What can I improve? How can I improve this number, this metric? And I focus on improving that metric. So, you know, some of the tools that I know that you provide, you're kind of like the Apple Watch marketing. You've got all these apps or tools, if you will, that will give you data and access and able to maximize every dollar that you do spend. So it is spent at the right time, the right message to the right person.
Absolutely. I think the key is at least being able to understand where business is at currently, what the potential upside is for revenue and clients, and then from there, being able to set a plan and adjust the plan. And so I work with businesses also from a coaching perspective, where I'm able to lead them down the track that they need to go, because oftentimes small businesses just don't have the budget to hire a marketing person. Medium-sized business might want to hire a marketing consultant. A large business, as you'd mentioned right at the beginning, is they usually have an internal department that does all that. And so I think the key is really with small businesses, where are you at? Figure out the numbers, figure out the approaches that you're using in marketing, and then from there, determine where the gaps are and how to fill those gaps, and start small. Start with one or two channels of marketing and do it well, and then from there, add on as you grow the business and have the budget to do so.
Yeah, you talk about scaling, and I know that's an area that you practice on, but start small, even if you're advertising or doing a pay-per-click or whatever. Once you find something that wins or a message that's a winning message, you can scale from there. And then it's using all the different tools in order to scale it, because it's really a numbers game, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely a numbers game, but it's also a strategy game. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes most businesses, small, medium, and large, make. Is they jump into tactics right away. I know when social media came out, and I saw it with many clients, they were on every freaking social media that they could be on. And then they went, oh, we're spending a lot of time, but we're not getting results. So I think that's one of the big challenges, is they forget that strategy is the first part of any plan. What's your strategy? How are you going to do it differently than your competition? Who are your customers? How do they gather information and connect with businesses to buy? And then from there, look at your options in owned media, earned media, shared media, and paid media, and determine where's the largest part of your market existing in those media.
Yeah. No, great advice. Hey, well, David Saxby, this is amazing. Thank you for your insights. We're going to have all your contact links in the show notes. And if businesses or entrepreneurs want to reach out to you directly, they'll have contact to you there. And I know that you'll do initial assessments and conversations. Those are always complimentary. And take a look at the program. And then if they want access to some of your tools, I know you can provide those as well. David Saxby, thanks for being our guest today.
Thanks, Michael, for the opportunity.
This podcast is created and associated with Summit Media. My executive producer is Beth Smith and director of research, Tori Smith. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting. This podcast is subject to copyright by Summit Media.
Goodbye.